Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
August the 4th, be with you on a Tuesday morning. Welcome on into a numbers game. That's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We got you covered for the next 3 hours on VSiN, the sports betting network. The baseball trade deadline, it has come and gone. We'll tell you the winners, losers, and the pennant and World Series bet that I placed yesterday. Because of that, there's another team's win total that I think we have to look at. As far as that is concerned, we'll touch on that and more throughout the program today. The Heisman Trophy, historically, who's winning that award? The favorite hasn't won since Marcus Mariota. Every time I say Mariota correctly, I feel like John Miller saying Carlos Beltran on Sunday Night Baseball. We will examine the Heisman Trophy. I think I've waterboarded everyone at this point enough with my Darian Mensa play. The others I am considering of adding to the portfolio. Interception market in the NFL. Who is going to lead it from a quarterback standpoint? Also, I forced Kelly to do a little homework. Our top five head coach quarterback combos that we like to bet on. Love not it. The best, who we like to bet on and why. We'll examine that later on in the program. And we begin, my friend, with the National Football League in a moment. But how you feeling on a Tuesday a.m.?
Feeling great. Glad to be here. Glad you're here. Glad you're here in those amazing glasses.
Yeah, we can acknowledge the glasses.
It's a power look by you today. So, I like it. So I really like it.
I'm wearing new glasses for those of you watching YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app. If you're listening on SiriusXM, I think that this is a good reason to sign up so you can check out the video. I have these big, bold glasses on, and I used to wear similar glasses to this. And as my head has gotten bigger, it's been harder to shop for them. So it's very rare I find a pair of glasses that I like. I bought these. I love them. I stand by. I love them. I think it's an interesting, different look. But the one issue I have is I look like I should be driving a Subaru right now. Okay, that's the vibe I'm giving off with these glasses. They're just a little bit more extra than I anticipated.
I think they're great. It's a power look from Dustin Sweetelson today. I like it, man.
Hey, we're going to roll with it. We're going to see what happens. And at the very least, it's going to be different. That's what I'll say. But the NFL is where we begin today, Kelly, on a Tuesday, because this is the time of year where it just takes over the headlines. And news out of Atlanta as Bijan Robinson and the Falcons have agreed to an extension, an agreement, 3 years, worth up to $75 million that would make him the highest paid running back in NFL history. He will receive $51 million guaranteed, including $37 million at signing. That is the deal for Bijan, who becomes the highest paid running back in history, ahead of Saquon Barkley, ahead of Christian McCaffrey, Devon Achane, Derrick Henry, and Breece Hall. That is until Jahmyr Gibbs signs his new deal this right now. I think for Bijan Robinson, I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here for a moment. One, I love the player. I think he's a superstar.
Yep.
The offense revolves around him because the elements he brings to the passing game. I mean, I think he had like 800 receiving yards a year ago, something like that. He is a dual threat in every sense of the word. But the thing that concerns me about a guy like Bijan Robinson.
820.
Yes. And he's coming off the last 2 years where he's led the league combined the last two seasons in scrimmage yards. But I would never pay a running back. This is why I'd also never invest a first round draft pick into a running back unless it was the last piece to put me over the top, because the Falcons are projected right now to be the worst team in this division in the NFC South. They have all this money tied up in the running back position. You can be as special as you want, but if you look in reality, the teams that win Super Bowls, and that's the objective here, you want to win Super Bowls, they don't pay for running backs. Go back the last few years. Kenneth Walker, your MVP a year ago. He just got paid after that. The year prior, Saquon Barkley's the outlier. He had a big contract to go to Philly, but he was the piece that put them over the top, that made them undeniable as a Super Bowl contender. The years prior, you had back-to-back champions was Isaiah Pacheco. Prior to that, Sony Michel won a Super Bowl. Ronald Jones was the leading rusher for Tampa Bay when they won a Super Bowl. Damian Williams, the first iteration of the Chiefs. You had Sony Michel and James White for the Patriots back in 2018. And in 2017, LeGarrette Blount was toting the rock, winning a Super Bowl. I love Bijan Robinson. I think he makes them a much scarier offense, but you still have issues at quarterback. I don't see this as being a formula for success, the way the Falcons are operating. Not that I'd let him leave. You're already pot committed. You use the draft capital to bring him in, but I don't necessarily believe this brings them closer to winning a championship.
Man, start off the show with a banger. Completely disagree. Yeah, you have to make this move if you're Atlanta. You don't have a choice. And out of a choice is part of your offense. And the
No. You have to make this move because you're pot committed, but I don't think you're closer to winning a championship.
Okay. I mean, I think the longer you hold on to great players, the better chance you'll have of that. I get with what you're talking about with running backs that are on Super Bowl teams. I think the alternate position I'll take with that is the quarterback that you have matters more. And what they have right now is cheap quarterbacks. So you can spend some of that other money on these other pieces to help elevate where that team's at.
That is totally. See, I agree with you there. That is totally fair. If you have an affordable quarterback, you can do this. Here's the problem. They don't have a quarterback who I think can play. The only benefit here is if both quarterbacks don't play and he's already locked up, by the time you draft your next quarterback, he should still be under contract. He should still be in his prime. But I don't know how much more jetway you have there to deal with it.
No, you might be right. So, like, I mean, here's the thing. It's you got Penix on a rookie deal, right? I think the plan in the Atlanta building is this either works out, right? Tua, Penix, one of those works out. We have Penix on the rookie deal. Either that works out, or we're, like you just said, we're bad. We're projected to finish last in the NFC South, and you're shopping for a quarterback next season already in a very quarterback-rich draft class.
100%. And Atlanta's a conundrum, man, because everything's in place. Bijan kind of highlights that. He is such a difference maker on the ground game. And as a pass catcher, you combine him with London and Pitts. I mean, there's a case to be made as a trio. I don't know who else is throwing out a trio as strong as that at those three positions, right? Dude, running back one, wide receiver one, tight end one. And that they paid might be the best.
They paid all those guys this offseason.
And here's where I'll say the positive could be.
Whew.
As those contracts continue to develop here over the years and the cap isn't as bad, that's when you can be a little bit more flexible in your spending. But for the Atlanta Falcons, I think they had to do this, but that doesn't change where I'm at with them. They still need to find a quarterback. Tua Tagovailoa is not the answer. Y'all keep talking yourselves into it as if a guy who can't push the ball 25 yards in the air is going to somehow win a division in the NFL today. And then Michael Penix Jr., I love him. Watching him throw the football at Washington was like, it was as pure a passer as you were going to see. And he just flicked it, right? Mm-hmm, he just flicked it. It was so effortless. He can't stay healthy. And that goes back to Indiana. I don't know if that ever gets right. But to your point that you just brought up, if they fail this year and Bijan's already been paid and London's already been paid and Pitts has already been paid, this upcoming draft in 2027, this is the one that I don't mind if... If they have the 10th pick in the draft, there still could be a quarterback available. I keep comparing this draft class to 2018. And remember, Lamar Jackson was at the back end of that round.
Right, yeah.
Right? The Ravens traded back in to take him. You had Josh Allen going a little bit later. Josh Rosen went high.
I was going to say the Rosen one, man.
But there was guys available for you to take. I think this is the draft class where that can help them here. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I can appreciate it. But does this make them a Super Bowl contender today? No, it does not.
I think the only part I'm kind of surprised about with this today is that we got Bijan before we got Gibbs.
Because, you know,
I think Bijan's worth more than Gibbs.
I was thinking the same thing. It must be something where Gibbs's people made a statement like, we're not signing till Bijan signs.
I guess, yeah.
Or Dan Campbell is such a player's coach that he was telling Gibbs, wait for Bijan to reset the market, then we're going to jump in and we're going to top it with you. Because if you just look at the production, Bijan has done more because he's had the ability because he didn't have David Montgomery. He had Tyler Algier with him. But
not splitting as much.
I love the guy, man. I love him. I love Bijan Robinson. I think he's a special player. The question is, would you rather have Bijan Robinson to be Offensive Player of the Year, or would you rather have him to lead the league in rushing, or do they go hand in hand?
Probably hand in hand, but man, you brought up the receiving yardage and damage from last year. And if we're talking, we're both crapping on these quarterbacks situated. A lot of dump offs and screen passes that involve Bijan Robinson this year. I think I'd rather play him Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, like I'm a big Gibbs guy. I love his game because he's so explosive and he's so shifty. It's a little bit different than Bijan. Like they have a lot of similar traits, but in the end, I think I trust Bijan Robinson to lower his shoulder more. I trust Jahmyr Gibbs to avoid contact more. Because he's just a little bit shiftier.
They are like same odds, right?
Yeah,
you asked that question. Top of the board. Rushing leader.
Top of the board.
Yeah.
But if I'm betting anyone Offensive Player of the Year, I'm going to the top of the board And I'm looking at Bijan over Gibbs because of the receiving factor that you just mentioned.
Me too.
Well, I think Goff is going to drop the ball off to Gibbs routinely and use that as an element of their passing attack. I just think that Atlanta is, it's a necessity, right? That's right, a luxury for Detroit to throw him the ball. It's a necessity for Atlanta to throw Bijan Robinson the football. That's why 8.5 to 1, I do think he's worth a look in it. And if you look at the history of the way that Kevin Stefanski has utilized running backs, when he's had a decent team in the past, going back to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt together, his running backs have put up monster production. His scheme is very running back friendly. He leans on that. And if Tua can't push it downfield and Penix has issues like getting hit in the pocket, you can bet your bottom dollar Bijan Robinson is catching plenty of passes out of that backfield.
Yeah, I don't mind that play at all, man. I have a bet in this market. It's AJ Brown at 60 to 1. I played a long shot.
I like that.
I think the winner is likely coming from one of these names at the top of the board. I mean, there is
that's the unfortunate part.
It really is. That's where I think at this time of year, if you're not sold on a Bijan Robinson or something like that, not comfortable putting in that bet right now, you're looking longer shot and look at playing some of these guys into the season.
And you know my deal, I don't normally go lower than 10 to 1 with futures. I don't want to hang up my money for all that long, but I just think Bijan is special.
Yeah.
So again, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. I'm telling you this guy's a special talent. I don't think the Falcons are all that much closer to winning a Super Bowl. Maybe even in this extension window of 3 years.
You know, that's
the problem for me
here. That part is probably true.
And then at that point, you're paying an older running back even more money. Baseball's trade deadline's come and gone. I'll tell you the team that I'm giving a big fat F to on the other side of a numbers game.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, Dustin Sweetelson hanging out with Kelly Bidlin, Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Appreciate you making us part of your day, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM, Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We will talk a little more NFL throughout the program today. Kelly and I will unveil our top five head coach quarterback combos we like to bet on. We'll look at the interception market. We also have to discuss a quote that I just saw where shots were fired from a new coach working with a new quarterback. And I think it was intentional at how he was limited with his previous quarterback. More on that later on in the program. Also, plenty to get to as far as guests are concerned today. Joe Sheehan will be with us coming up a little bit later on in the program. We'll get his thoughts on the Major League Baseball trade deadline, which is where I want to go here because it was extremely active. It was one of the more fun social media days in a long time.
Yeah, it really was.
For me yesterday, just watching the news come in, I only got duped by one bad report, but I don't think it was one of those intentionally bad ones. I think someone just had really bad
information.
And they put it out there. In the end, a flurry of trades, and it forced me to place a wager on one team to win the pennant in the National League and also a little bit on the World Series because I'm kind of in the camp where I think all of you have gone way too far in this obsession about the Dodgers making it unfair. The Dodgers made a trade for Tarek Skubal over the weekend that any team could have made. Any team had the players, the prospects to make that thing go, and they opted not to. Your arguments about the deferred money, the way that they operate with their contracts, I absolutely hear you and see you. But just because the Dodgers are the best team on paper, I am still not believing they're a lock to win the World Series. I am so sorry. There are holes with every team. We still don't know two of the guys in this rotation pitching. You've got Shohei Ohtani dealing with an injury. Are they the best team in baseball? Absolutely. Should they be the favorite at the number they currently are to win the World Series? 100%. But that doesn't mean they can't be knocked off. And I thought at the trade deadline yesterday, a bunch of teams put their chips into the middle of the table and they said, you know what? We're going to give them our best shot. We're not just going to lay down and let them take home the hunk of metal that Rob Manfred hands out at the end of October, early November. So when we look at the trade deadline, here are my winners and losers on how things went down. First, my winners. Now, The Dodgers are number one because the Dodgers did not mortgage the future. The Dodgers did not have to give up all that much to acquire Tarek Skubal, which theoretically puts them over the top if it all works, if it all comes together. So I love what they did. They added Skubal. They added Chris Bubik, who I think is the number one starter for their third rotation they're going to throw out there. But they get an A+. Okay, that is my number one team at the top of the board.
I like it, man. I like the other part about the Dodgers thing real quick. I love that, but a lot of other teams could have made that same trade that we were also talking about this before the show. I love that a lot of other teams could have made that trade for Skubal. And then also the Dodgers sit here today with the second highest payroll in Major League Baseball.
Well, yeah, because just because you have the money doesn't mean that you can be successful. I think of the Harold and Kumar quote, just because you're hung like a moose doesn't mean you have to do adult films. I think that was a line somewhere around there. Just because you got the deep wallets doesn't mean that you're going to find the right people, like the right groceries. Like you go to a restaurant that is supposed to be high end, they buy the best ingredients. Sometimes you can't cook. That's sometimes right. The guy back there doesn't know what they're doing. And that would be the New York Mets, who spend more money than the Dodgers actually year in and year out. And they were sellers at the deadline. More on them in a moment. My second team up here, I love what the Chicago Cubs did. And you know what? I was talking on VSiN for the last couple of weeks. I wanted them to get Kevin Gausman. I wanted them to get Reed Detmers. There was a report that they acquired Detmers, which is when I ran to place a bet on them. Unfortunately, that trade was incorrect. They did get Clay Holmes, though, and Tyrone Taylor, who's having a great year off the bench for the Mets as an outfielder. Really good against left-handed pitching, has a little bit of pop, but an elite defensive outfielder, can play all three defensive outfield spots. So I love that move for them. They also bring in a reliever from the Angels who's under contract for a while. Braxton Garrett has some more rotational depth. I love what the Cubs did. I took a little. I think that they are in a situation where they could be dangerous against the Dodgers. I love their offense. They have an MVP in PCA, but they have depth in their offense. They also have good defenders, up the middle especially. And I think that gets underrated. We get so caught up in fantasy numbers and offensive output, but they may not have the aces the Dodgers have on the mound. But if they're getting ground balls, Dansby Swanson, Nico Horner, and then PCA in center as a guy up the middle to strengthen that, I just think that that gives them huge upside defensively to take some hits and runs away. I think Gausman's experience is so massive to this team. So I thought the Cubs were worth a flyer at 20-1. I think that this team is ready to hang with the big boys right now, and I never buy into the Cubs.
Yeah, this was one Adam Burke with a great write-up on the trade deadline as well over at VSiN.com. He was all over that as well, Dustin. I'm sure you saw that. But yeah, love the Cubs moves.
Speaking of Adam Burke, a managing editor over at VSiN.com, he is a Cleveland Guardians fan, but he hates this team. He's a self-hating Guardians fan. I actually love the two moves that they made, more because this is an organization that normally does nothing. And Foster Griffin comes over from Washington. That is another piece to throw at people. He's pitching like an ace. There is regression coming because he does allow contact. He doesn't strike a lot of guys out. But I feel like they'll find a way to use him properly, to go with Messick, to go with Bybee, and to go with Gavin Williams. I really like that. And then Nathaniel Lau at first base DH. That's a professional hitter that helps strengthen and elongate their lineup. They get a B plus for me. And then here are my four Bs.
Yeah, real quick, I'll just add on to that. Joe Sheehan coming on with us next. He's got a bunch of details in his newsletter today on the deadline. Foster Griffin, leader in war of all the players that got traded here over the past couple days.
Yeah, I don't understand why he's not getting more hype for Rookie of the Year. I also think Parker Messick should be getting more hype for AL Rookie of the Year. I don't understand why Kevin McGonigal is just running away with this thing that doesn't really track. But everyone's obsessed with war. And I'll do the, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. I think you got to watch games. And I love Kevin McGonigal at shortstop for Detroit. But I think some other guys are having monster years. And we're just getting caught up in all this, like, amalgamations of combinations of how we view these players through certain lenses. It's like, just watch the games. Who's having a great year? Who's not? Like, stop using numbers to hedge your opinions. That's what I would say. That's probably one of my biggest issues with the way we talk about sports these days. Like, instead of just going off what you're seeing, people go, well, the numbers don't bear that out. Well, the numbers can be skewed because of one off data point. What are we talking about here? All right. I have four Bs for the trade deadline. The Phillies bring in Louis Arise, Brooks Raley. I like those additions a lot. My only reason why this isn't higher than a B is because they got so much worse defensively. Luis Arraez is not a plus defender. He goes to second. Alec Baum, it's probably a plus move to move him from third to first. Bryson Stott goes to third. He'll be good there because he's athletic. But Bryce Harper in the outfield, there's a reason that the Phillies went away from that to begin with a couple years ago. I am concerned about his move back into the outfield. The Red Sox get a B for me, and it's not because I don't like Adley Rutschman. Adley Rutschman really hasn't lived up to the hype, though. He is a huge need fill for the Red Sox, but they gave up a lot.
Yeah.
According to the reports, they gave up way too much, but I don't know if the Orioles were willing to do the move if they didn't have to overpay, because I'm sure they were pitting them against other teams. Eric Miller's a good reliever on the back end, has good stuff. Tampa Bay gets a B for me. I think that when you look at the track record of the Rays, the way that they brought in guys like Cedric Mullins and Steven Matz and Nick Martinez, if they want to acquire a veteran out there in the marketplace, they believe that that guy is being underutilized and they can polish him off and maximize their talents. They're going to do that with Freddie Peralta the rest of the way, and it costs them next to nothing. They also bring in Liam Hicks. They desperately need a little bit more offense at catcher. I like that combination with him and Fortes. And then Tyler Wells is a swingman from Baltimore who's had some up moments over the last couple years for the O's. I like that. And then a B for me is Pittsburgh, but I almost want to go B plus. If you look at the Pirates, this was the one major need. Their bullpen's been terrible. Luke Weaver comes in, Camilo Doval comes in, Kirby Yates joins, bunch of veterans, a lot of experience, electric arms, and they've blown 20 saves this year, tied for seventh most in all of baseball. This, to me, fixes issues for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, my losers here, real quickly. The Braves get a D for me. I'm sorry. They got Tyler Molly and Brent Suter. They wanted DeGrom. He wouldn't waive his no-trade clause. They needed another arm badly. You can't buy this team in the playoffs if it's Chris Sale, Tyler Molly, Grant Holmes, Bryce Elder, Martin Perez, Ronaldo Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach coming off injury. Sorry, no. Can't do it. The Tigers get a D-. They got prospects back for Skubal, and I don't know if they got anyone special that's going to make a real big impact in the next couple of years. The Yankees and Mets both get Fs. The New York Yankees are fascinating. Brian Cashman having the job security he has, I need to know what dirt he has on the Steinbrenner family. Like, what kind of outrage will there be if he ever releases whatever he has in a folder tucked away somewhere in a safe? Because they traded away Duvall, and they didn't have anyone to replace him in the bullpen. The offense stinks without Aaron Judge. They're trotting Anthony Volpe out there at shortstop. The one positive is they're going to call up George Lombard to play shortstop. Maybe you should have done this a few weeks ago so you would know if he's ready to play at the major league level at shortstop, and then you could have done something differently here. Instead, if Lombard doesn't work, you're going back to Volpe. And then lastly, the Mets. All that money, all those players, they walk away with prospects in the end for the New York Mets. More on the baseball. Joe Sheehan, who does he think is the biggest winner of the trade deadline? He breaks it down coming up next on A Numbers Game.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, Dustin Sweetelson with Kelly Bidlin with you for the next couple hours here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Thanks for hanging out with us. However you're tuning in, SiriusXM 158, YouTube TV, VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States, God Bless America, and Game Plus up in old Canada. Baseball trade deadlines come and gone. A lot of buyers out there believing that they have a chance, despite everyone in the narrative saying, you know, the Dodgers are inevitable. They got Skubal. The league is falling apart. We'll ask our next guest if that is the truth. He is Joe Sheehan. Check him out, joesheehan.com. The Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, a legend in the game, and at @Joe_Sheehan on X. Where do you come down on all the complaining about the Dodgers, Joe? Because I got to tell you, I've reached a point where I actually appreciate the Dodgers. I love what they did for baseball. It gives us an evil empire to root against. But all this talk that they're just locked up and going to win the third straight World Series, as if it didn't take seven games to get past the Blue Jays, who are sub .500 this year. Do you believe the Dodgers are inevitable, or is this thing a little bit more wide open than people perceive?
Yeah, the Dodgers' odds have gotten a little bit ridiculous, as has the narrative around them. This is just not the way baseball works, guys. We've had this expanded playoff format since 1995, and if we've learned anything, it's that it's the best team does not always win. When you match up playoff baseball teams, the gap between the best and the worst is smaller than it is in the NFL or in the NBA. So you get the Giants winning in 2014. You get the Cardinals winning in 2006. It's not just the best team advances. The Dodgers, I saw maybe plus 145, maybe plus 150 on the broadcast the other night. Let's say that's the number. To get to a plus 150 favorite playing three best of series, they'd have to be a 3-1 favorite in every series. And that's simply not the way baseball works. Now, I have not been able to find a no on the Dodgers winning the World Series. Here in New York, you guys may have it in Vegas. But that's the bet. If you give me a fair no, say minus 170, minus 175, I really think that's the way to go because there is a massive overreaction to the Dodgers getting schooled.
No, minus 166 over at Kalshi right now. So available out there at Kalshi and some of the prediction markets for people that might be interested. Because, Joey, I'm kind of interested in betting that no price as well. Just going to yesterday, all the moves that we saw, kind of just which one was the biggest surprise to you, Joe?
The Orioles trading Adley Rutschman only because they'd gotten to within this 2.5 of a playoff spot. This was really felt like the last run of their cycle behind Henderson and Rutschman. Kyle Bradish had been pitching well. They brought up all of these players about 3 or 4 years ago, made the playoffs two straight years, missed this year. I thought with this run, they would actually keep Rutschman and go for it. I don't know that Mike Elias has the job security to start another rebuilding cycle, which is what he did here by trading Rutschman for a series of prospects from the Red Sox. Now, on merit, he made a good trade. They got three really good prospects from the Red Sox, including a pitcher, Anthony Eanson, has been one of their highest risers this year. I'm just surprised that they actually tapped out. You look at Elias, who's had this job since the winter of 2018-19, two playoff appearances and a collapse from there. I just don't know that he's going to be around for another rebuild.
No, they got to move on here. And I know last year, it kind of raw deal with Corbin Burns or a couple years ago when they traded for Corbin Burns and it didn't work out. But they're kind of the lesson to me in how teams handle trading prospects. You can't sit on every prospect and hope that they're all going to work out because some guys don't have playing time. There's positional redundancies. Take advantage of the hype that shouldn't exist for these guys and bring in guys who can make an impact on the major league roster. As far as the deadline goes, who are some of your favorite trades, like the biggest winners for you, Joe?
I think the Angels did well, which is a sentence I haven't said in 25 years. John Mozeliak, kind of in a temp role as their GM, going out and trading Jose Soriano, who got off to that great start this year, guys, but he really a number three for one of the top shortstop prospects in the game and Arjun Nimala, some other prospects from the Blue Jays. I like that aggression. I love the trade they made with the Cubs. I'm always in favor of trading relief pitchers, especially when it's really been a hot month. Ryan Seferjan, been very good for this team over the last month, got his walk rate under control, but they were able to get Moises Ballesteros for him. And yeah. Moises Ballesteros, top 30 prospect just a year ago. So, you know, he got jammed up in Chicago. The catchers, Carson Kelly, Miguel Amaya, blocked him behind the plate. He got some DH at-bats. He was platoon. It didn't go very well. I think he gets an opportunity to play every day in Anaheim and turns out to be really good. So, you know, I thought the Angels had a surprisingly good day, given we've been making Angels jokes now for quite some time.
Yeah, Joe, I guess when turning towards some of the teams that we think are truly in the mix to win a World Series, to win an LCS, biggest threats going forward, who position themselves best after this trade deadline?
Among the contenders, I think the Cubs had the best day. This is a team that's had so many pitching injuries, has really been faking it with the pitching side of it. And still, they were on pace for 91 wins coming into the deadline. And you look at what they did picking up Kevin Gausman, Clay Holmes, who's currently injured, should be back shortly. I mentioned Seferjan. They bolstered that rotation and that bullpen such that not only do they have better players now, but they're better positioned when guys like Ben Brown and maybe even Justin Steele come back. They'll get Daniel Palencia back later this month. This is a team whose pitching staff on July 31st and August 31st is going to look much different. And you look at last year's postseason, they basically ran out of pitching when they faced the Brewers. I don't think that's going to be a problem for them this year. So I think among the contenders, the Cubs had the best day yesterday.
Joe Sheehan is our guest, joesheehan.com for the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter at Joe_Sheehan. You can find him on X. Let's look at the baseball card for today, Joe. And you and I are simpatico on this one, my friend. Mets are in Cleveland. It's two lefties on the bump. Joey Cantillo facing Sean Manaea. Total 7.5. Mets plus $1.29, but we're both looking at the Guardians. It's up to minus 156, but ShopRun, you might be able to find a better number out there. Which direction are you looking at here?
Yeah, this moved a lot this morning. I was looking at it this morning. I want to say I got it at 136 at one shop. But yeah, the Mets, some of this is subjective. I watched the Mets a fair amount over this last weekend, and they just look like a team that's pretty much ready for the banana boat. A lot of their veterans have had such bad years. And you look at a lot of their innings, it's, you know, guys like A.J. Ewing and Carson Bench will get on base, and then Luis Robert and Jorge Polanco will make outs. It's just such a dichotomy on this team, with the veterans they brought in are terrible. The other issue is a little less subjective. They traded Brooks Raley, Wascar Brezaban, and a right-handed reliever whose name I'm blanking on. They traded three of their top four relievers.
Weaver.
Thank you, Weaver. A lot of names last couple of days, guys. It's a little exhausting. Anyway, they traded three-fourths of their bullpen. And even if they can get a lead, I think they're going to have a hard time keeping it. Basically, Daniel Duarte, a rookie right-hander, and Devin Williams make up their bullpen now. They're calling up a whole bunch of guys to play the series. So I think there are a lot of different paths for the Guardians to win this game.
All right, like it, Joe. Next game on the board, you've got a play in as well. The A's and the Reds going at it here. We've got the Reds about minus 133 favorites, total set at 9. Where are you looking in this game?
Yeah, while I understand the Reds didn't acquire anybody at the deadline, they traded away Nathaniel Lowe. They've been a bit disappointing. They're going up against the A's team that, you know, again, you're looking for teams that have kind of checked out. The A's have lost 25 out of 30. With all of the injuries they've had, they've really fallen apart offensively. Nick Kurtz, of course, he sat out yesterday. Questions about his hand. He went to a specialist. But even if he plays, the A's are a team now that has just two above-average hitters in the lineup, in Kurtz and Tyler Soderstrom. The offense is just terrible. Even getting JT Ginn back isn't going to help him all that much, because Ginn's going to go 5 or 6. He's going to turn it over to one of the worst bullpens in baseball. This is just a very bad team. Guys, a couple of weeks ago, I gave you the A's for the worst record in baseball. I gave the A's to not hit their over. I think both of those look really good today. This is a team that could, you know, I remember the Orioles finished 1 year 4-32 back in the 2000s, I want to say. The A's could have that kind of finish here.
Joe, last one here. The Cubbies taking on Tarek Skubal, his first ever start at Wrigley Field. I'm actually on Skubal under strikeouts tonight. Dodgers minus 219 on the road at Chicago feels disrespectful when the Cubs are much better against left-handed pitching than most teams in baseball. Total's 9. You can get the Cubs at almost plus $1.80 at home, and that's the direction you're going to look?
It is, because I don't think the Dodgers right now should be minus 200 over anybody. We saw them get swept over the weekend in Boston. We saw them come into the break losing, was it 4-6 to the Rockies and Diamondbacks. You know, the Dodgers get bored. I'm sorry. I know this is not the most analytical point, but when the Dodgers start the season, they know their next relevant game is going to be played until October 1st. And they pretty much locked up the West. They're in what's a pretty good three-team race for the byes. But, you know, we saw the Dodgers last year kind of not care that much about getting the bye, sweep the Reds, and then go on to win the World Series. It's not the Dodgers are inevitable. It's that the Dodgers will inevitably get bored. That's the point of the season we're in right now. And I just think there's just no business, even with Skubal on the mound, for them to be minus 200 over everybody. So give me the Cubs at big plus money, even against Skubal.
He's the best in the game. He's Joe Sheehan. Check out the Joe Sheehan baseball newsletter, joesheehan.com, and on X at @Joe_Sheehan. Appreciate the conversation as always. Look forward to chatting again down the road, Joe.
Thanks, fellas.
The wait is over, people. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide, it is here. Sign up for a VSiN Pro today and get instant access to our College Football Betting Guide, featuring previews of all 138 FBS teams, preseason top 50 power ratings, betting systems, and more. Plus, you also get our NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, best bets, real-time betting splits, everything we do over at VSiN.com. You can start today for just $9.99 or get a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Speaking of the guide, professional handicapper Paul Stone, he ranked his top quarterbacks coming back in college football. Looking at the list, I disagree at the top.
Ooh.
We will dissect it and what that means for the Heisman Trophy market on the other side of a numbers game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's a numbers game. Dustin Sweetelson in for Gil Alexander this week. And then things go back to normal next week. The summer of Swede coming to an end, unfortunately for me. However, the one thing I would point out, I love doing this show. I love hanging out with you. Fortunately for me, the 4:30 alarm.
Yeah, it's fun, buddy.
I'm not built for it anymore, man.
It's fun.
When I first got here and I was doing Follow the Money and I was waking up at like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning every day.
Yeah.
That was one thing. And since I haven't done that for a few years, it's been an adjustment.
Now, as you brought up, last week or a couple weeks ago, that's the adjust your entire life. This is like the little tease where you're just like tired all the time.
Well, so the problem is if you do not nap immediately after this show, there is no napping.
Which, yeah, I don't nap.
But see, here's
then I just die by the weekend.
I'm so soft. I have like one thing that I need or else I'm miserable, and that's sleep. If I don't get 7 hours, I'm a misery.
Yeah,
so
same way.
So when I'm sleeping 4 or 5 hours to do this show, I want to nap and then I can't nap. And then all of a sudden I start to do work and I can't think and I'm not productive. So it takes twice as long to do the work because I'm also a stupid person on top of it. It's just a really bad combination for me. Things will go back to normal very soon here. Don't worry. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide, it's out right now. It's freaking awesome, man. The information is so in-depth. And any way you want to look at the season, we've got you covered. Whether it's predictions from everyone here in terms of who's going to win each conference, who's going to wind up going to the playoff, who's going to win it all. And the way it tallies out, we had 22 people picking these things. 7 are on Notre Dame to win the title. Notre Dame, by the way, is a double-digit favorite in 11 of 12 games. They're -7 in the other. And they're a really good team coming back this year. We'll talk about their quarterback here in a second. We also had 4 people on Oregon. I'm in that camp. 3 people on Texas, 3 on Georgia, and then 1 individual on each of these. A&M, Virginia Tech, Alabama, Miami, and only 1 on Ohio State. That would be J. Lou in the morning. The only person on the Buckeyes.
Virginia Tech. All right.
Well, that's Ryan Kramer, who went to Virginia Tech, and James Franklin's there, and he believes that they're going to be just fine. I think that's what happens when you attend that school. You think that that's a normal thing. No offense to Ryan Kramer, who I love very much.
I do not think Florida State's going to be very good this year.
No, in fact, I think Mike Norvell is the number one in the market to be the first college coach.
He's got to be, right? Like, he almost has to be.
But at the same time, they haven't invested like you thought Florida State would invest. I thought when we didn't have NIL in the portal, Florida State had the most money for resources in the state because it's the state school. Miami's a private institution. Miami's not supposed to have money, but private donors now can step in and literally just write checks for players to come over. Now, they were doing it back in the day with Nevin Shapiro, but now it's on the up and up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's
a little different.
Miami's always been doing it. Yeah.
All right. One of my favorite things here in the college football betting guide is Paul Stone gave his top 15 college football quarterbacks for this season. Okay. So here is the list. You can see it if you're watching the VSiN Watch app, YouTube TV. He begins the list with Arch Manning at 1. I just want to run through it first, and then I'll give my points. He has Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss at 2, CJ Carr 3, Dante Moore is 4, Gunnar Stockton's 5, Julian Sain is 6, John Mateer from Oklahoma 7, Lenore Sellers 8, which I think is a bold call by him, and I actually respect it. I think Sellers was the Heisman hype guy a year ago, and then they didn't have the year that they expected, but he's still so unique, especially on third downs, that I think he warrants being on this list. Sam Levitt at LSU is 9. Darian Mensah at Miami becomes number 10. He has Bach Meyer from BYU, who you know I'm high on, at 11. Marcel Reed from A&M, who I also love, at 12. Jaden Maiava from USC at 13. Byron Brown, who transferred from South Florida to Auburn, at 14. And then CJ Bailey, who I have in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. If you check it out now, I'm on NC State over 7.5 wins. Basically, when you read my write-up, it's because of CJ Bailey. Okay. That's why I like them to go over.
Like it.
So I'm gonna agree with Paul in some senses and disagree in others. I think Arch Manning should not be the best number one quarterback in the country. It's just the pedigree's there, the name is there, the ability might be there. I don't see the substance being there for Manning. In fact, I don't know if Manning cracks my top 5.
Whew.
Like, that's legitimately.
Just the up and down nature of last season. You just don't think he's putting enough out there yet to be number one on a list.
I think he's in the best situation. I think he has a ton of help this year. Now, he didn't have a ton of help last year. They had injuries and other issues. but they still had plenty of talent.
Yeah, it's Texas.
Yeah, I didn't see him as being a guy that elevates the players around him. I think he needs the other players around him to elevate his game. And to me, that's the opposite. Trinidad Chambliss, I believe, is a player who elevates everyone around him.
I love seeing him second on Paul's list.
I think he...
He was so impressive to me last year. I know there's big-time coaching changes and big changes at Ole Miss, man. I thought he was awesome last year.
No, he would be number one on my list, but let's also be fair. Trinidad Chambliss, I believe, is, what, 23 years old, something like that?
Probably like 29.
Yeah, like he's been around, man. Just want to get the age right here. Trinidad Chambliss is 23 years old, and he'll be 24 in August. So there's a bit of an age difference there. I would actually go Chambliss one. I would then go... Probably CJ Carr 2, Dante Moore 3. I would go John Mateer 4. I'm not even at Arch Manning.
Okay. I love the John Mateer buzz this offseason. I haven't gotten there with a bet yet. Have you bet him?
No. Heisman? So, okay, when we get to the Heisman in a minute, he is in a group of like 3 or 4 guys that I can't bet all of them.
Right.
So I have to figure out which one of the group I want to bet when we lay that out. And I probably have Darian Mensah ahead of Arch Manning. I'm sorry. I don't buy the Arch Manning hype. I think everyone is getting really caught up in a lot of stuff that doesn't exist. He didn't play high-level high school football. And, like, he looks good in shorts. Actually, I look good in shorts. I actually have a really good lower half. It's the top half that's an issue. But I don't think he warrants being number one right now. He might be at the end of the year. But based on what we've seen, he's not number one. I do like Paul's list, though. A lot of it I do like, and that includes Bear Bachmeyer's, the guy we're going to talk about for Heisman right now. So as far as we can extrapolate this list towards the Heisman market, I want to do a brief history lesson on the Heisman, because the preseason betting favorite has not won this award since Marcus Mariota in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Von Tobel writes in, John Mateer over Arch Manning is insane and you don't believe it. No, I think John Mateer is better. He's better right now than Arch Manning.
It's the second time in the last 3 shows that Jonathan Von Tobel's texted in, you're insane.
But he's better right now than Arch Manning's not that good. He put up numbers against the back end of their bad schedule a year ago. I don't see what everyone's seeing. He's like a slightly above average quarterback. Maybe I'm being a little harsher. He's not in the upper tier is all I'm saying. All right, history lesson of the Heisman Trophy before I was rudely interrupted by JVP.
Zach Cohen did a great job on this in the guide.
Recent Heisman Trophy winners. So look at the numbers next to them.
Mm-hmm.
The preseason betting favorite last time it won was Marcus Mariota in 2014. Going back the last few years, it apparently is worth looking deeper down the board. Fernando Mendoza was 60-1 a year ago. A couple years ago, you had Travis Hunter at 35-1. Jaden Daniels was 10-1. Caleb Williams, 8-1. Bryce Young, 10-1. Devontae Smith, 60. Joe Burrow and LSU in 19 was 40-1. 2018, Kyler Murray, 20-1. Baker Mayfield was short at 7-1. Lamar Jackson in 2016 was 50-1.
Yep.
So I've waterboarded you guys enough with Darian Mensah. That is my number one play here in this market. The only time I've hit Heisman Trophy, by the way, is Jaden Daniels in 23. I think I got 12-1 after they got off to a weird start. We couldn't figure out who the Heisman winner was going to be. And it looked like he was just having insane numbers because they had no defense and everything was a shootout. But it's not easy to win. Only one person can win this award. So the other name that I've officially bet is Bear Bachmeyer at 55-1. He was a true freshman a year ago at BYU, threw for 3,000 yards, almost 65% completion rate, 15 passing touchdowns, 11 rushing touchdowns. The game should slow down for him. But the key is Notre Dame. BYU takes on Notre Dame. And if he has a monster day, and if they somehow pull off that upset with that game this year, I think they absolutely have a chance for him to win the Heisman. By the way, that game is at home in Provo. I think that makes a difference. We've seen Notre Dame get up for a lot of big games, so I don't always doubt them in the big ones. It's the weird ones like a Ball State or a Northern Illinois where they stub their toe traditionally. But if BYU has something for them this year, that moment could be the Heisman moment for Bear Bachmeyer.
Right.
The jumbled group that I can't figure out who I want to bet along with Mensah and Bachmeyer, I want a little Dante Moore at 11-1 because I had him last year at 25-1 and I love Oregon this year, but I don't love going top of the board with a couple bets. There are 3 guys priced around the same that I don't know what to do with. John Mateer is 20-1. Jaden Maiava at USC is 25-1. And Marcel Reed at A&M is 35-1. Marcel Reed lost his coordinator, Colin Klein, who goes to become the head coach at K-State. But he still has Mario Craver back. Isaiah Horton's a burner on the outside. Maiava returns his offensive line, but he's missing some weapons on the outside, and it's a crucial year for them. And then Mateer, he looked like a top five pick through four games last year, and then he got injured and never looked the same. Which version of Mateer do we get? And by the way, he's coming back to the same system that he had back at Washington State. I think Mateer is the play for me. And I think based on Jonathan Von Tobel calling me out so that I can be right about Mateer being better than Arch Manning, I have to put my money where my mouth is.
I might be betting it. One other quick note, just for zooming out, only five non-quarterbacks have won this award since 2000. So focus in on quarterbacks.
Yep, that's where we stand with that. We will look at the baseball card and more as the show rolls on here. It is a numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.